Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We'll be continuing this morning. Let's see. So this is Gopal Champu. Covering not just this one text one, but this section. And it begins this way. Now the speaker is in Gopal Champu, there's a speaker and a responder. The speaker is Madhukanta and the responder is Snigdhakanta, and they're reciting Krishna's pastimes before the residents of Vrindavan. That's the context. So Madhukanta says, one should consider how the days were spent, Krishna's pastimes, childhood, according to the sketch I have given. Parashara also describes this. Quote from Vishnu Purana, Krishna enjoyed with the gopis. One moment without him became 10 million years. Shukadev Goswami says, text one, whenever Krishna went to the forest, the minds of the gopis would run after him, and thus the young girls sadly spent their days singing of his pastimes. When the day was over, with music, singing, and dance, Krishna, the treasure of affection for the people of Raja, along with his friends and cows, entered his house. Sounds like the cows went in the house. I thought they went to the Goshal. Unlimited devatas flying higher and higher in the sky with airplanes along with their followers desired to see him clearly. Not seeing him, they came near his house. When he entered his house, the devatas, feeling disappointed and full of desire, remained there at night, motionless, like painted pictures. The surrendered devatas remained submissive until he emerged from his house. When he came out, he played his flute to gather the cowherds and cows. Though his actions were not visible to them, the gopis sang about those actions, but they saw those pastimes with their eyes because of their abundant prema. It's called sporti, that they would actually see, although they couldn't see. It was ecstatic vision. Friend, understand the nature of your friend Krishna. He destroys the hearts of persons feeling separation without mercy. And there's a little parenthesis that says this refrain should follow each verse. Apparently this is a Gopal Champu. A Champu is meant to be sung or recited, and then it's the refrain comes after each verse. He rests his cheek on his left arm while he's playing his flute. He has his restless eyes, tender fingers, a shining flute pressed to his mouth, and a gentle smile. He is attached to the sweet sounds of human songs mixed with artistic ragas. He bewilders the wives of the devatas and gives power to all, including the devatas. And let's say the refrain at least once. O friend, understand the nature of your friend Krishna. He destroys the hearts of persons feeling separation without mercy. While he became the subject of their songs, he would sit in Vraja or in the forest, nourishing his joy and longing while playing the flute. They sang about this. The golden line of Lakshmi on his chest appearing like lightning is not fickle. That is remarkable. The necklace with the kastuba shining like the sun is fickle. That is remarkable. The flute showers nectar and calls the cows, which give auspiciousness to the followers of Dharma. Chewing the grass with their teeth, they prick up their ears. He dresses up colorfully, shining with bunches of peacock feathers and flowers and with mineral colors. No, it's noise. He is the secret lover of the gopis. Going to the forest near a lake with blooming lotuses, he calls the cows by name, Ganga, Yamuna, while playing his flute to make them quickly drink water first. The far-off rivers, thinking they have been called, stop flowing and remain motionless, full of longing. The gopis again sang of those distant rivers. While wearing a colorful dress with peacock feathers, mineral dyes, new leaves and flower clusters, he calls the cows and the rivers, and it calls the cows and the rivers become transformed. Like us, the rivers with waves for trembling arms desire his foot dust, which is brought by the wind, having performed meager pious acts. The rivers know they are unsuitable for you. Starting from the experience of bliss when Krishna called for the cows, they realized all those actions once the gopis came to the house of Yashoda and desired to praise him out of longing. Hiding their feelings, they externally expressed ordinary sentiments. They sang another type of song, which is, like Narayana, he has great powers. He wears a forest garland. His great courage is described by us as follows. Noticing the sound of his flute calling the cows, the forest and creepers spread out and become filled with Krishna's form as Antaryami. They show five symptoms. That's ecstatic symptoms. Their flowers bloom like smiles. Honey flows like tears. Buds appear like hair standing on end. Their leaves tremble and their branches bow down. In this way, the branches express their bliss. Remarkable symptoms appeared in the non-moving as well as the moving beings. When noon arrived with many enjoyments, Krishna began playing. He became absorbed and bathing in large ponds scented with lotuses, and then decorated himself with only tilak and garlands. Then he sat on an attractive stone slab at the base of a tall tree with new leaves in a very solitary place near a large mountain at the edge of an astonishing flowering forest. His friends went far off herding the cows, and he listened attentively to the sweet song of the bees, which were strongly attracted by his bodily fragrance, and curiously he examined their humming as it reached the various notes of the musical scale. His enjoyment was nourished by the sounds of the birds singing in tune with his flute, which followed the bees' humming. Quite a picture, huh? Jiva Goswami. Decorated with attractive tilak, very fresh tulsi leaves, and forest garlands, playing the flute, he made tunes following the humming of bees, which were attracted to his fragrance. Unlimited groups of cranes and swans followed and surrounded him. They became completely absorbed in the sound of his song. Meeting with his friends, Krishna, who distributed joy by the best garlands and by his excellent form, which broadcast his beauty with a rustic costume and peacock feathers, displayed his activities of herding the cows. When the cows grazed on pure grass, on treeless land, on some hill, Krishna played his flute to diminish the heat of the sun burning at midday on the forehead. The clouds were strongly pulled by the Malara Raga clouds, as if pulled by a wrestling opponent. He thus played on the flute to make the place cool. The sound of the flute echoed in caves of large mountains and then echoed throughout the three worlds. It attracted them for seeing his attractive pastimes. Experiencing this, the gopis described it in their gathering. Dressed in his gleaming forest attire with garlands and head ornaments, accompanied by Balaram, Krishna herds the cows near the mountain by playing on his flute. Krishna, like a cloud, bewilders and attracts the universe and showers joy. Cooling his body in the shade of a tree, he gives happiness to his friends. The cloud, worshipping him since he is a friend, because of similar color, showers water, but does not come close since it acts as an umbrella to give him shelter from the heat. Krishna played in the shadows of the dense clouds. In Yashoda's gathering, the gopis sang as follows to inform the ordinary people, "Look at your son, expert in the art of playing, self-taught on the flute, who bewilders Brahma and Shiva and herds the cows by playing attractive ragas." Some of the female messengers laughed at the gopis who, in coming from Braja during the day, by some pretense or in a hidden way, stood on the path frequented by Krishna in order to follow him. But on seeing him, acted as if they did not see him and gave up out of shyness. Quote, "Oh, woman blinded by passion, the peacock is in front of you, but he who wears a peacock feather is not here. Krishna is the life of the universe, and the peacock is not." The servants informed them about Krishna in disguised words. Krishna spreads moonlight and nourishes the desired object. He supports a remarkable branch. He conquers all by his tricks. The messengers indicated to the assembly Chandravali, moonlight, Lalita, desired object, Vishakha, the branch, and Radha, all. Some gopis, on the pretext of worshipping the devatas, picked flowers and made great noise. And that's it for the morning. It's a Krishna meditation. In this literary form of champu, I don't know the details, but at least the indication is it's something that's sung or recited, or both. Something like Chaitanya Bhagavat is also meant to be sung, or Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's, you know, certain long verses and so on, but a certain meter. And it's these, my understanding is that's the way it was passed on. There was written form, but it was remembered by those who weren't so literate just by singing and singing and singing. Something very similar to how the Vedic tradition worked. It wasn't by books, it was just by reciting and reciting and reciting. And by hearing, it would be, you know, faculties of memory were stronger. There are scientific studies, neurologists, these three that I'm aware of, have studied the effect of reciting Sanskrit for some number of hours each day. Memory increases substantially, 2 or 3 times, something like that. So, who knows what the memory of our Goswamis was at the time and their scholarship and everything and everything. And, you know, the gifts of providing these literatures to help us meditate on Krishna. These are Krishna meditations. And from the perspective of the gopis, specifically, at least this section, this is how they view with ecstatic love, how they view Krishna when Krishna is away. And because of their, it's described in the commentary on the Dhruva pastime, when specifically, when Lord Vishnu is appearing in his heart, and then he disappears, and startled Dhruva opens his eyes and sees Vishnu standing before him. Commentary says it's a 2-step process for Dhruva, and for the gopis it's a 1-step process. They see him, the spurti is the word, which means an exhibition of the form of Krishna before one. And that was their continuous state. And, you know, in addition to that mystery, they would still feel separation, which is, you know, mystery on top of mystery. So many mysteries with Krishna. But we're getting a picture here of the very, very, very special quality of love of the gopis for Krishna. And because of their love for Krishna, his reciprocal, because it's his nature, according to how one regards him, Krishna reciprocates. That's a natural tendency in each of us. And where do we get it from? And Krishna is the source of everything. Very special. It's certainly a better place than Earth, planet, and Kali Yuga. Certainly better. Although we're not qualified, we're shameless. We want to be there. Rupa Goswami's words. Ashabandha. And Krishna and his representatives, his beloved representatives, are extending this invitation. Please come. But I'm not qualified. That's okay. Please come. Means become qualified, please. And please come. This is Lord Chaitanya and his followers. There's a lot of work to do, isn't it, in this world? I mean, internally and externally. So let's see if there's some discussion. I don't know if there's going to be any because it's a very elevated topic. You're on. It's on. He's going to turn the volume up because you speak softly. Go ahead, speak. And the gopis?
And a yogi who is also meditating and achieving a different goal.
Well, what's it, so in case you didn't, those online people didn't hear, the difference between Dhruva and his meditation and a yogi and their meditation, and the difference of the destination for them. Well, it doesn't have to be a different destination. Dhruva had bhakti. He received bhakti from Narada and from his mother. So it was meditation plus. And a yogi may also have bhakti or may not. May just be meditation. And specifically even meditation and paramatma, and it might be some other kind of meditation. You know, a negation kind of meditation. That's a form of meditation. It's highly disciplined and quite dry, but so the destination depends on, everything depends on the regard that one has for Krishna. And so there's bhakti, there's no bhakti, and then there's degrees of bhakti. And the destination depends upon that. Because that's what Krishna reciprocates with. Is it clear?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. As I was hearing this description, there is this realization that the attention to details, it really draws the heart to that pastime. It's very, very sweet to hear.
Jiva Goswami's writing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're describing the picture like we can...
As
if we can see it, exactly. Being driven by mode of passion, I am realizing this tendency. It's just like keep moving and not paying attention to details. I mean, both material and spiritual life. But particularly for spiritual practices or even for services, I'm realizing it's very, very important. Attention to details. Could you please share any practical ways how I can cultivate that?
Well, the starting point is already there, and that's recognizing that it's important. And then what's important is where your attention goes. So the practical pointers is continue to invest in the acknowledgement that it's important. And then you find ways and means that work for you. And it starts with the hearing process. So let's just say, supposing you're a pure devotee and you're hearing this description. You know, who knows what you'd be doing, rolling on the floor and standing, jumping up and down. And so that's not us, but what those symptoms are the result of the sound vibration and the details of the sound vibration, because it's conveying Krishna, Krishna's form, Krishna's activities, Krishna's attire, Krishna's exchanges. So it's just a refinement of sensibility. And so it's by cultivation. As I'm speaking, I'm thinking of this nice story that Janavi, the kirtan singer Janavi, spoke about her association with Mother Jamuna. And Jamuna was very kind to everybody, and she was particularly kind to young girls because she was like mentoring them. So from the time that Janavi was a little girl, young girl, not little, Jamuna's association, one of the things she trained her, or at least inspired her, was appreciating tastes of food. And she would ask, what do you taste? And, you know, and then describe, then tell Prabhupada stories. So, you know, it helped her appreciate besides, hey, this tastes good. So that's a detail. And Prabhupada was tuned in. His taste was refined. And that's the tongue. But then, you know, the ear. So it's... It may seem that you lose the essence if you pay too much attention, so much attention to detail. But detail is refinement of the essence. It's not apart from the essence. Like anything. In painting, in cooking, in music, in architecture, in medicine, you know, any of the applications of Vedic knowledge, detail makes everything so nice. And without detail, you know, it's not as nice. It doesn't, so, and if the detail is in relation to Krishna, it stimulates loving attraction for Krishna. So let's go, you know, way back, and there's God. And he's almighty. And that's nice. But in what ways is he almighty? And when he, so get closer, and it inspires feelings and attraction and etc. So if by understanding is important, then you find ways, and you know, it becomes more matured or developed, and not just in one area, but in other areas, attention to details becomes, and it's personalism, as opposed to the other. And it doesn't mean you have to go, going slowly may help, but if somebody goes quickly, it doesn't mean they can't be attentive to detail. It's not easy, but those are some responses to your question. Over here, you have more?
I have an unrelated question, Guru Maharaj, not related to this morning's discussion.
Okay.
Regarding this nature of a person, like Kshatriya, Shudra, or Brahmana, different kinds, if we have some kind of nature dominant, it just came up in the discussion of devotees. Kindly forgive me if I'm not able to phrase it properly. But what came up is, in ISKCON, at least the path we see is we get first initiation and then we get the Brahman initiation. So does that mean everyone has to become a Brahmana order to become?
No. In one sense, pass the microphone. In one sense, Brahmana means, no to her, over here. Brahmana means Vaishnav, or Vaishnava means Brahmana, say it the other way around. Vaishnava means Brahmana. So is everyone to become Vaishnava? Yes. And if one becomes a Vaishnava, one becomes a Brahmana? Yes. Because Vaishnava means Brahmana. The mature fruit of being a Brahmana is not only to know Brahman, but part of Brahman and having a lifestyle that matches. Now, to become an initiated Brahmana doesn't mean that you're the intellectual in the bunch.
So we can still have other nature.
We do. We have our nature, and we don't give. You know, doesn't just get up and fly away. It's our nature. We want to align ourselves towards aspects of goodness. Sama, dhamma, tapaksha. So those are mode of goodness features. We align ourselves that way. And at the same time, so it's not... You're aware, could you fix this blind? Are you aware of the effort that the devotees in ISKCON Hungary have done to help develop Varnashram model within ISKCON? Are you aware of that? Okay. They have a farm community. But their understanding, so let us model our social structure on the farm that matches the social structure of the Vedas, because it's wholesome and healthy and everything the Prabhupada says. And then, so they started discussing it threadbare for, you know, 2-3 years, like really seriously. And two main conclusions, it's not just for people that live on farms, it's for people, and it's not just for the world outside us, it's for us. That's a social structure. And then for us. And then how to manifest it in the world. What would it look like? So further study. They came up with, and Sivaram Maharaj wrote a book on it, these qualities that are found in the chapter that immediately follows the Prahlad Maharaj story. Seventh canto. So the qualities of a human being come first before you can do Varnashram. And that was Narada's response. So, become a human being. You know, sometimes there are devotees that take part in devotional life and they exhibit, qualities that aren't really the kind of qualities a human being has. And, you know, that's like, wow, that's disturbing. So it's important. So just a little sharing. the training and education director in all of China wanted someone to develop curriculum for China on Varnashram. I was consulted. I said, take this book. Fortunately, the person is English as well as Chinese speaking, and they're developing curriculum that's with Chinese characteristics, but based in principle. And recently I asked Shivram Raj, that was part one, when's the plan for part two? And, you know, it's sometime next year because he's working on some other book right now. So, Varnashram within our personal lives or within our society doesn't mean you abandon your nature. It's you become human and you recognize your nature and you act according to your nature. And with dedicated to Krishna, that's Daibi Varnashram, then one becomes a Vaishnav. And the Brahminical initiation is specific. Well, in ISKCON, it's specific for deity worship. It's not that if people don't worship deities, they can't have second initiation. But when the mantra is given, mantras are given in second initiation, it's through the mantras that one approaches the deity. That's what our acharyas speak about again and again. We have this two-tiered. First initiation, which is not a Vaidika, it's a Panchratrika system. It is a Panchratrika system. It wasn't just pulled out of the air. But it's to help qualify us to then become prepared internally and externally to receive Gayatri mantras. And when we receive, so Gayatri mantras may be given to the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, or Vaishyas. And then it's got a different name, it's Upanayana. And when we receive mantra and sacred thread for men, for boys or men. So it's a blend of these two systems, and it takes a little refinement. And is everyone meant to be a Brahmana? Well, everyone's meant to be a Vaishnav. And when one becomes a Vaishnav, then it's recognized they receive Gayatri mantras. Whatever their psychophysical nature is and continues to be.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. I just want to know, like, is there any difference between
Between
atomic soul and spirit soul?
Atomic soul?
And spirit soul?
No, it's just an adjective.
Oh, okay.
Angsa. The Sanskrit word for, this is Prabhupada, the Sanskrit word for atom is paramanu. Excuse me, anu. And the super soul is paramanu. No, soul is paramanu. There we go. There's the atom and even smaller than the atom. Paramanu. So the soul is atomic. Atomic soul or spirit soul, particle, or angsa, mameva angsa, jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatana. Is that it? That's it?
And, one more question. Brahma, one Brahma is there for one universe. That means so many Brahmas for the universe.
Correct.
So, is it Lord Shiva is also there for each and every universe?
Yeah. Now, Shiva is a tattva, not a jiva. His Shiva tattva is not a soul occupying the post of Shiva. So it's different. There's multiple Brahmas because there's multiple jivas occupying that post. And I don't know of any scriptural verification of this, but my understanding is Shiva Tattva. And he is, in the universe, he has functions. One of those functions, he rules over Tamagun. That's a function. And with the process of creation, he has another function to start. And then another function is to bring about destruction of the universe. So those functions are within every universe. And Lord Shiva performs those functions within every universe. But it's not exactly like it's a different Shiva in every universe. And he just kind of spread everywhere. It's Lord Shiva. It's Shiva Tattva. All right? Now, over here, can you bring the microphone this way? Okay. All right. Okay.
Satyavrata Prabhu asks, generally, it is found that the ladies are more devoted, simple and chaste, but they have a lot of attachment. How does Krishna help them to come out of the attachments?
By picking them up. He sees their devotion and he reciprocates with their devotion. He picks them up.
It's from Neeraj Prabhu. In chanting, how can we apply this principle of attention to detail? I try to hear the mantra. Most of the time I am distracted. But when I do hear, this principle, attention to detail, helps me go deeper. So, how can we apply that principle of attention to detail?
Just do it, as they say.
This is from Radhaduti Mataji, from yesterday's class.
Okay.
So when Mother Yashoda calling Krishna and Balaram, she did not express her fear of the demons, but tried various other ways of calling them back from meal. So I have two-part question. One is, seeing my child cry, obviously stirs emotions within me, and at times my mind may become more focused on not letting him cry. So one part is out of love, but another part is because it's uneasy for me to handle it. How can I not become captive to my child's or other people's manifest emotions, but rather use my judgment to choose a course of action that would benefit them properly?
Well, other people and children are a little different. But, you know, the child that doesn't have language is expressing something. And, you know, it's left to the mother to intuitively understand what it is that they're expressing. So you can just take it that when the child is crying, the child is expressing something and you don't know exactly what it is. And you're trying to, you know, maybe so many things and you're trying to discern what it is. So you're just reciprocating without feeling oppressed and, that they're crying. You just want to take, so you have to, that's what, you know, what sixth sense mothers have that they can understand what the child wants, I don't know. But that's what motherhood involves is that the main thing in concern-wise is what does the child want? What is it that they wish to express? And are you being attentive? In some cases, I'm not a parent or a mother, but some cases it's just you let it go. They're just, you know, exploring their vocal cords and the ability to make sounds and, you know, so much depends. It's not helpful. This much I know about parenting. It's not helpful to be a helicopter parent where you're there and everything and that the child just becomes dependent upon the helicopter mom. And that's not good. As the child grows, that if the helicopter mom isn't there, then they can't function. So I think you need to ask parents that are matured devotee parents that understand how to respond when the child is crying and how to not over-respond. And then, you know, there's other people. And it's different because the child is fully dependent and other people are not, usually. And so you have a relationship with this other person, and depending upon how they express themselves, you can just try to try your best to understand what it is that they're expressing. Not necessarily you own the expression, you know, their own, their feeling. You just try to understand what they're trying to express, the feeling and the message, and then you process that according to your capacity and your situation and so forth. That's a mature relationship. I would suggest, Radha Duti, that you listen to the recordings of Veer Krishnamurti speaking on empathic communication. And this is covered in that talk, the two parts, exactly what your question is. You don't own the other person's emotion, or should not be governed by another person's emotion, whether you understand it or don't understand it. How to have a responsible relationship with other people through proper communication.
Second question is covered. So next is Sri Radhika Mataji. She says, I was struck by how the cloud considered Krishna his friend because they are of the same color. It seems the material tendency we have, like birds of the same feather flock together, is a reflection of spiritual tendency. We understand that we are not the body, but we act appropriate to our bodily situation.
Yeah.
For instance, we are not a man or woman, but we act appropriate to our gender.
Yes.
Is this principle applicable to racial or ethical differences? And if so, what is the proper application of it?
Well, yes, it's appropriate. And, you know, the birds of a feather flock together. So here's something I was thinking about. On this topic, something that I heard from Devamrita Maharaj, that on the one hand and on the other hand, Prabhupada taught you're not the body, you know, over and over and over again. And on the other hand, and sometimes Prabhupada would say what may appear to be disparaging things about people of color, not abundantly, but from time to time would say such things. And on the other hand, from Devamrita Maharaj, I heard that there was a devotee in Detroit, Prabhupada disciple named Premarnava, real good singer and really happy person, delightful person. Prabhupada, when visiting Detroit, actually might have been from Cleveland, but in any case, Prabhupada called him in his room and was, you know, tearful, saying, please do something to help your people. Which really touched his heart, because, you know, he who's in transcendence is recognizing persons who are in difficulty because of their race, do something. Please do something. Etc., etc. Sending Brahmananda to Africa and other people, sending other people to Africa and recognizing, you know, who the audience was. He would describe in some places in Africa cannibalistic tendencies. And, you know, and at the same time, you know, a great happiness and joining kirtan. So the elevation of the soul from misfortune to good fortune through the medium of bhakti, and specifically the chanting of the holy name and Krishna prasadam and all those wonderful things. The gift was for everyone, regardless of anything, race, color, nationality, birth, socioeconomic position, education, beauty, regardless, no precondition, because that's the Bhagavad message. And at the same time, recognizing distinction and wanting people to feel encouraged from whatever their position. That was certainly Prabhupada's mode, dealing with the hippies and all kinds of other people. He knew exactly where they were at, and he, you know, extended himself to them. So the same applies. You know, it takes a special kind of intelligence to know how to enter and not be caught in battle identification and all those other things. You know, the oppression that comes to those who are not in the supremacy category. That's it. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.